Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine you're managing the architecture for a massive global cloud computing network.
Right, like a sprawling AWS setup or something.
Exactly. And suddenly, an entire cluster of user-facing applications in Tokyo just completely crashes.
So naturally, your first instinct is to inspect the local hardware in Tokyo.
Yeah, you check the physical servers, the local code, the regional power supply. But everything looks perfectly fine.
Which is always the most frustrating part.
Oh, absolutely. So after weeks of tearing your hair out, you finally discover the real culprit. And it's a subtle misconfiguration in a global routing protocol.
Ah, let me guess. Pushed from a server farm thousands of miles away?
You got it. From a server in Virginia. So the failure was local, but the cause was systemic and incredibly distant.
That is a perfect analogy for what we're looking at today.
Right. Today, in this deep dive, we are exploring a complete paradigm shift in genomics that mirrors this exact scenario.
We're talking about the proteins circulating in your blood, the very ones that determine whether you develop complex diseases.
And what we are finding out is that the vast majority of their genetic regulation isn't happening locally at all.
No, it's really not. The breakdown is being orchestrated by distant, hidden genetic switches.
So the big question for you, the listener, is this. How could mapping this sprawling, decentralized network completely change the way we validate biomarkers, repurpose drugs, and treat diseases like rheumatoid arthritis or heart failure?
Well, to map a network of that magnitude, we are examining a truly unprecedented multi-cohort analysis.
Yeah, today we celebrate the work of Mine Koperlew, Carl Smith Byrne, Brian Richard Farolito, Claudia Langenberg, Mike Pietzner, and a massive international consortium.
It's an incredible team. Researchers from 38 different cohorts who have advanced our understanding of the human proteome.
And specifically, its genetic regulation. Their 2026 paper, published in the journal Cell, provides the foundation for our deep dive today.
It is, it's crucial to anchor our conversation on why this massive consortium targeted circulating proteins in the first place.
Right, because we already have thousands of genome-wide association studies, don't we?
We do, and they highlight regions of our DNA linked to disease risk. But DNA is static.
It's just the architectural blueprint.
Exactly. Proteins are the dynamic physical infrastructure of the body. They're the structural beams, the signaling molecules, the enzymes.
So the gap in our knowledge has basically always been tracing that path. Like, from a genetic variant in a non-coding region of DNA, all the way to the actual physical manifestation of a disease.
Yeah, and proteins in the blood serve as that critical intermediary layer.
Okay, let's unpack this. Yes. Because historically, we've had a very localized view of that intermediary layer.
Yeah, very localized. When geneticists searched for the cause of a malfunctioning protein, they almost exclusively hunted for cis variants.
And just to clarify, cis variants are genetic mutations located right next door to the gene that actually encodes the target protein. Like the worker standing right at the assembly line making the part.
That's right. But that localized view has been incredibly limiting. It assumes biology operates on a simple, isolated, linear script.
Wait, isn't the body way more complex than that? Like, what about the managers in a completely different building who ordered the parts? Why have we been ignoring them?
Well, we haven't been ignoring them on purpose. It's just really hard to map. But human biology is fundamentally a complex, integrated system.
Which brings us back to that cloud computing analogy. A cis variant is a broken server in Tokyo causing a crash in Tokyo.
Exactly. But what we've been missing are the trans variants.
The managers in the other building.
Right. These are the distant genetic regulators sitting on entirely different chromosomes. The servers in Virginia manipulating the network in Tokyo.
And I want to pause here because we need to demystify how a transvariant actually works. I mean, it isn't a magical remote control. There has to be a physical mechanism, right?
Absolutely. The mechanisms are highly physical and incredibly diverse.
How so?
Well, often a transvariant sits within a gene that codes for a transcription factor. That's a protein that physically travels through the cellular environment.
Oh, so it actually moves?
Yes, it enters the nucleus and binds to the promoter region of our target gene on another chromosome to dial its expression up or down.
Wow, okay, so it's a physical delivery system.
Or, alternatively, it might involve massive three-dimensional chromatin looping.
Chromatin looping?
Yeah, where the physical architecture of the DNA folds upon itself. It brings a distant enhancer region into direct physical contact with our target gene.
That is wild. But capturing those systemic interactions requires just a staggering amount of statistical power.
Oh, completely. If you are looking for connections between millions of genetic variants and thousands of circulating proteins across different chromosomes,
the sheer volume of data creates a massive multiple testing problem, right?
Yeah.
The noise threatens to drown out the signal.
Which is why the scale and the strict methodology of this study are so vital. We are looking at data from up to 78,664 participants.
Almost 80,000 people. That's huge.
Across 38 independent studies. And they measured over 1,100 circulating proteins in the blood.
And I think in the UK Biobank cohort alone, they measured up to 1,463 distinct proteins.
Yeah, they generated this proteomic data using Olink technology, which relies on antibody-based proximity extension assays.
The mechanics of this are actually quite elegant. Instead of just using a single antibody that might, you know, non-specifically bind to the wrong target and muddy the data.
Which happens a lot.
Olink uses a dual antibody system. Two distinct antibodies, each tagged with a unique short DNA sequence, must both bind to the exact same target protein.
And that dual binding requirement is what provides the incredible specificity.
Because if only one binds, nothing happens.
Exactly. When both antibodies bind, their DNA tags are brought into close proximity. They hybridize, creating a unique DNA barcode.
Oh, that's so clever. And then that barcode is exponentially amplified using PCR.
You got it. It basically translates a microscopic protein concentration into a massive, highly quantifiable genomic signal.
Okay, so we have incredibly precise protein quantification across nearly 80,000 people. I mean, how did they avoid false positives with so much data?
Well, the researchers utilized inverse variance fixed effects meta-analyses. That's how they located the protein quantitative trait loci, or PQTLs.
And a fixed effects model is a deliberate choice here, right?
It is. They are operating under the assumption that the underlying genetic effect on a protein's expression is fundamentally the same across these cohorts.
Which, we should note, were predominantly of European ancestry.
Yes, that's an important caveat. And the inverse variance weighting simply ensures that studies with larger sample sizes and more precise data have a stronger pull on the final statistical consensus.
So identifying a PQTL, a coordinate on the genome correlated with a protein level, is one thing. But they took it a step further.
They had to. In the tangled web of a transassociation, a single genetic signal might encompass dozens of genes.
That's linkage disequilibrium, right?
Exactly. To solve this, they deployed machine learning-guided effector gene assignment.
So they didn't just guess?
No. They integrated chromatin state data, gene expression data, and algorithmic predictions to pinpoint the specific causal distant gene pulling the strings.
And we really need to emphasize their threshold for declaring a discovery.
It was incredibly strict. To prevent false positives in this ocean of data, an association had to clear a genome-wide significance p-value of 5 × 10⁻⁸.
That is a tiny p-value.
And it required directional consistency. If a transvariant correlated with an increase in a protein in one cohort but a decrease in another, they just threw the signal out.
When you apply filters that rigorous, you expect the surviving data to represent the most fundamental, undeniable architectures of human biology.
And the numbers that emerged completely rewrite our understanding of genetic regulation. Out of all the high-confidence protein regulators they mapped, they identified just over 24,000 PQTLs.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The distribution between local and distant regulators.
The ratio is just shocking. Only about 5,040 of those associations were local cis variants.
And the rest.
A staggering 19,698 were distant transvariants.
Wait, really? That's nearly 80%.
It is. It proves that the vast majority of protein regulation in the human bloodstream is happening remotely.
The systemic network outweighs the local hardware 4-to-1.
It forces a total reevaluation of how polygenic our protein levels truly are. The paper illustrates the spectrum beautifully by analyzing the variance explained.
Which is just the percentage of a protein's fluctuating levels directly attributable to genetics.
Right, and we see localized extremes, like the protein FCRL3.
Oh yeah, where genetics explains over 45% of its variance, almost entirely driven by heavy local cis regulation.
Exactly. But then you have a protein like VEGFR2, the vascular endothelial growth factor receptor.
Which is critical for forming new blood vessels.
Its genetic architecture is sprawling. Its levels rely on a massive interconnected control panel of transregulators scattered all over the genome.
And when you map that sprawling network, you don't just find random switches, do you?
No, you uncover the biological pathways the body uses to maintain systemic homeostasis. What's fascinating here is that these distant regulators revealed entirely new biological pathways.
Especially regarding how the blood proteome is controlled.
Right. The pathway analysis showed transregulators disproportionately mapping back to specific systemic biological processes, most notably N-linked glycosylation.
Ah, N-linked glycosylation. It's a foundational cellular process. We're talking about the enzymatic addition of complex glycan molecules, basically sugar chains, to the asparagine residues of proteins.
It's vital. This modification dictates everything from a protein's structural stability and folding to how it interacts with cellular receptors.
And how quickly it is cleared from the bloodstream.
Exactly. The data revealed a massive enrichment of trans-peak UTLs mapping directly to the genes encoding the glycosyl transferase enzymes.
The enzymes that attach those sugars.
Yes. What this tells us is that a mutation in a distant glycosylation gene can subtly alter the sugar tags on hundreds of different circulating proteins simultaneously.
Oh, wow. So a systemic alteration changes how quickly those proteins are degraded or filtered out of the blood.
Right. So the transvariant isn't necessarily changing how much of a target protein is produced. It is altering the global routing protocols that determine how long that protein survives in circulation.
Which is a beautiful realization of systemic biology. But okay, let's transition to the clinical reality here.
Sure.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We have a giant spreadsheet of 19,000 distant genetic managers. How does this actually help patients or change medicine?
To understand that, we have to grapple with what the researchers call the discordance problem.
And this is a major, somewhat troubling finding for the pharmaceutical industry, isn't it?
It really is. Much of modern drug discovery relies on a statistical framework called Mendelian randomization.
Which operates as a kind of natural clinical trial. Since our genetic variants are randomly assigned at conception, they act as instrumental variables.
The theory goes, if you carry a genetic variant that naturally elevates a specific protein, and you also exhibit a higher rate of a certain disease, then the protein must be causally driving the disease.
It aims to strip away confounding variables like diet or lifestyle.
However, for Mendelian randomization to be valid, it relies on a strict assumption. The genetic variant must only affect the disease risk through its effect on the biomarker.
But when the researchers compared these genetically predicted disease links against actual observational data from real patients, the convergence was shockingly low.
The drop-off is severe. They isolated 193 high-confidence genetic links. Relationships that Mendelian randomization suggested were rock solid.
And how many held up?
When cross-referenced with real-world biomarker studies, only 52 showed directionally consistent, statistically significant support.
Barely a quarter. That is a massive mismatch.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we are running directly into the problem of horizontal pleiotropy.
Meaning,
if you focus solely on a local cis variant to validate a protein as a drug target, you are blinding yourself to the network.
Ah, so a genetic variant might increase the expression of protein X, but that same variant might also independently alter a completely different, unmeasured pathway that actually causes the disease.
Exactly. Protein X looks like the culprit, but it is merely a bystander reacting to the same underlying genetic stress.
So we cannot just rely on the local server in Tokyo to tell us what caused the crash. We have to map the trans network to verify the true causal pathways.
And when we do that, this sprawling map of distant regulators actually starts solving major clinical bottlenecks.
Yeah, the study outlines specific instances where trans PQTLs provide definitive genetic validation for clinical interventions. Let's talk about real-world drug repurposing.
A prominent example in the study involves rheumatoid arthritis. The researchers identified a very specific circulating protein signature highly associated with the onset of the disease.
And autoimmune inflammation is notoriously complex, right? Often involving dozens of cascading cytokines.
It's a mess to untangle. But when they traced the trans-pQTLs controlling this specific rheumatoid arthritis signature, the genetic pathways converged decisively on a single distant gene.
TYK2, or tyrosine kinase 2.
Right. TYK2 is a critical signaling node for immune responses, and pharmaceutical companies have already developed and approved TYK2 inhibitors, primarily for conditions like psoriasis.
Oh, I see, because this comprehensive genetic map reveals that the TYK2 pathway acts as the master distant manager orchestrating the rheumatoid arthritis signature.
Yes. It provides robust human genetic evidence for repurposing those existing inhibitors for a new patient population.
It completely bypasses the agonizing trial and error phase of target discovery.
And we move from autoimmune inflammation to structural organ degradation with their findings on heart failure.
Which is another massive clinical challenge. Diagnosing heart failure often relies on measuring a circulating biomarker called NT-proBNP.
NT-proBNP is released when the muscular walls of the heart are subjected to excessive stretching and stress.
Clinicians use it heavily, but distinguishing whether a biomarker is actively participating in the disease pathway or merely passively leaking from dying tissue is challenging.
But the researchers found 7 distinct, highly significant trans-pQTLs that physically map the genetic regulation of NT-proBNP directly to establish heart failure risk pathways.
So this systemic mapping upgrades NT-proBNP. It proves it isn't just a downstream consequence of tissue damage.
Exactly. Its distant genetic regulators are inextricably linked to the primary pathology of heart failure. It definitively supports using it as a predictive biomarker.
That's incredible. And this study pushes even further into active therapeutic targeting when analyzing cardiovascular disease and the protein furin.
Furin is fascinating because its traditional role is deeply intracellular.
Right. It operates predominantly within the trans-Golgi network inside the cell, acting as an enzyme that cleaves and activates other proteins before they are secreted.
And if you target intracellular furin with a drug, you risk catastrophic side effects because it is essential for fundamental cellular operations.
But the researchers triangulated their trans-pQTL data with patient survival metrics.
And the genetic architecture painted a vastly different picture of disease causality.
Yeah, the convergence showed that the risk of adverse cardiovascular events wasn't being driven by the furin trapped inside the cell.
The trans regulators revealed that it is specifically the extracellular furin, the fraction of the enzyme actively circulating in the bloodstream,
that plays the causal role in driving cardiovascular pathology.
This systemic resolution is therapeutic gold. Extracellular furin promotes adverse cardiovascular remodeling.
So by mapping the distant regulators, we isolate the specific fraction of the protein causing harm, making circulating furin a highly viable, accessible new candidate for drug targeting.
Completely bypassing the intracellular risks.
We're seeing how a systemic perspective unlocks TYK2 inhibitors for rheumatoid arthritis, validates NT-proBNP for heart failure, and isolates extracellular furin for cardiovascular disease.
It's powerful. But to maintain scientific rigor, we have to acknowledge the boundaries of this specific analysis.
Right, the limitations. What did they miss?
Well, the limitations are significant and represent the next frontier. First, the data relies on Olink proximity extension assays.
While incredibly precise for the 1,400 proteins measured, the human body produces tens of thousands of proteins.
And countless more distinct isoforms generated by alternative splicing. We are still mapping a relatively narrow highway system within a massive continental landmass.
And the map we do have is heavily skewed. As we mentioned earlier, the nearly 80,000 participants in this meta-analysis were overwhelmingly of European ancestry.
Yes. The underlying architecture of these distant transregulatory networks, including linkage to sequilibrium structures and allele frequencies, can differ profoundly across diverse global populations.
So until we achieve this scale of multi-cohort integration across diverse ancestries, our understanding of the systemic proteome remains fundamentally incomplete.
Absolutely. Transregulation that dictates disease risk in one population might operate through entirely different genetic nodes in another.
It's a powerful reminder that precision medicine must be universally inclusive to be genuinely precise.
But even with these boundaries, the foundational shift in how we view the genome remains.
Yeah, By mapping over 24,000 genetic regulators, this study proves that the vast majority of our blood proteins are controlled by distant genetic managers rather than local ones.
Roughly 80%. It's orchestrated by a sprawling, distant network of systemic managers.
When we look at these distant signals, we can spot hidden biological pathways like N-linked glycosylation and identify entirely new ways to repurpose existing drugs.
And this raises an important question for you to ponder.
What's that?
What does this mean for the future of clinical trials if the drugs we are testing actually affect a sprawling, distant network of genes rather than just a single localized target?
Or, taking it even further, if environmental factors like a significant shift in your gut microbiome or exposure to a viral pathogen can alter the expression of a single distant transcription factor?
Could they actively hijack this entire trans network to rewrite our blood proteome in real time?
That is a staggering thought to leave on. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Of names, 38 crowds, one pulse in frames. Proteins drifting like paper kites. Genes pull strings from distant sites. Not just next door, not the close key. The loudest levers move silently across the map through hidden lanes. At the distance, switch rewrites the veins. It's trans across the line. Hands draw the design. Sugar coats and secret roads, turning whispers into codes. Read the blood like city light. Find the driver, not the hype. Glyco gears in the dark run true. In-link loops in a midnight queue. Singing drums, cell type choirs where the signal comes. Biomarkers shine, but they can mislead. It says cause while the chart's just red. Triangulate, don't fall in love. Follow the effector from glove to glove. It's trans across the line. Distant hands draw the design. From protein storms to disease routes, we tag the targets. We sharp and bright. Find the driver, not the hype.